Yeah, thank you. Mike, nên này nè, thế nên này nên nè, yêu cầu biểu cơ sĩ, Being Kitty Muan Larry Kaguchin Mod Hollow Igep Tagarchin Anton Igep Chichen Francis Igep Kunuchin Homie Igep Nu Vernal Kanibet to Ayak Puniginam. So hello, I introduced myself in my language, which is Northern Ute, and told you that my Indian name, my native name is Iyokopi Rukushke. It means young woman. Well, my grandfather gave it to me and he told me it means young woman who is pleasing to others. And I always kind of was questioning that because I am a people pleaser. And so I always was kind of like, oh, even when I was little, my grandpa saw that in me and that's why he gave me that name. But recently, I learned of a different translation for that word, iyokupi, which is a Lakota word. And the translation I heard is that it's like one who makes people laugh or one who brings happiness. And so my new translation for my native name is young woman who brings joy. And I feel like that's been a good way to turn away from the people pleasing and kind of focus more on how I can bring joy, my loving parent can bring joy to my little girl, and how I can bring joy to my community. So I told you my native name, and I'm living in Utah on my ancestral homelands. And I also told you who my parents and grandparents were. I tried really hard not to put their last names, but I think one of them slipped in there. But we do that in the language so that when you meet someone new, they can tell who you are. Like if I'm meeting an elder, they probably don't know who I am. They'll know who my grandparents are. And I did it today to call my ancestors in and to call them into this space because my ancestors are my higher power and they're a big source of strength and love that my loving parent taps into to love my inner girls. And I just want to say the Wayok, thank you to Zoe for inviting me. And thank you to Zoe, Carmen, and Irma for all of your work organizing this beautiful event. And thank you to all of the speakers who have come before. I've gotten a lot out of this event. So thank you so much. When I was thinking about addressing social dysfunction through ACA recovery. The social dysfunction, a lot of things came up. I've experienced a lot of racism, experienced sexism, homophobia, because I am a queer woman, of Native American ancestors. I'm Northern Ute on my paternal side, and I'm Assiniboine and Lakota on my maternal side. But I'm living on the Northern Ute Reservation in Utah and more culturally Northern Ute. But when I was thinking of all these, systems of oppression that have impacted me in my life, and how to kind of connect those things, I really thought about colonialism, because that's the root of the racism, the homophobia, the sexism, because my people weren't like that. We didn't, and I'm not saying we were perfect, but those concepts weren't things that we had. And a lot of that came with colonialism, when Europeans came and invaded the land and took the land and really tried to disconnect us from our connection to the land, which was a big source of strength, a big source of power and love and, all of those good things. And so that's kind of what I'm gonna talk about today. And one of the main ways that I, heal from that and bring, I bring healing to that through learning my language and through practicing our traditional ways of being, because they exist outside of that colonialism, and and all those harms can't penetrate it in a way. And so my language, my ancestors, the land, all of those good things are my higher power. And that's what my informs my loving parent when I'm trying to talk to my little girl and heal her from all of those really negative experiences that I had. And, you know, just to name a few of them, I didn't grow up on my reservation, but I grew up on a reservation in Washington State. And because of that, and border towns to reservations are kind of historically just super racist against Indigenous folks. And so when I was going through elementary school, you know, high school, all of the teachers, they weren't teaching to the Native kids. You know, they weren't teaching to the students of color. It was always they were looking past us, or you would just assume that you were stupid, you know, that you didn't know anything. And they assumed also that, you know, we all came from these families of dysfunctional families of, you know, people, drunks, like the drunk Indian is a stereotype that I feel like I grew up with and was always really harmful. And, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, and his resentments about colonialism really, I think, fuels his drinking, and it fueled mine. I became an alcoholic. So just a lot of shame for who I was, and really internalizing that I was stupid, that I was, you know, just going to be a drunk Indian that could never amount to anything. You know, these were things that my younger self, my inner children took in and thought were true, you know? And, one of the first times that really started to turn around for me is I was back home on the reservation and taking this language class. And I heard one of our elders, just amazing female elder, said, you know, "I'm so proud to be you. I wouldn't want to be anything else." And that just really hit me, because my whole life, I thought white kids were better. You know, I thought the white girls were prettier, and I thought the white girls were smarter. And I just thought my life would be so much better if I were white, you know? And so to hear this elder say, like, she wouldn't want to be anything else, it just hit me. And I was kind of like, well, yeah, there are a lot of good things, you know, about our people. And so that's something that my loving parent holds on to. Like, she is proud to be you. And she reminds my little girl, you know, that, like, there's so much power and strength and love in that identity. And one of the ways I get that, you know, is through the language. Like, our language is so complex, and it holds all of these different kinds of relations that, like, English can't even fathom. You know, English can't even get anywhere close. You know, like, our word for love is bimshi. And the elders always say, like, "Hey, don't say that to your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know, like, don't just throw that around," because bimshi is like a really deep cherishing that is kind of like, "I can't live without you," you know? So if you say that to, like, your partner, it's, you know, they're just kind of like, don't do that. So I always think about that, you know, our language holds concepts that are just beyond English, that are just so much more complex, and that is the kind of knowledge that lives inside of me in the language and in the land, you know, because our people say that the language came from the land, you know, because we've been living on these homelands since time immemorial. And so that's where the language comes from. And so I remind myself, you know, my loving parent, when I start to feel stupid, which I still struggle with now, you know, feeling like those feelings come up and that little girl isn't sure, you know, can we do this? Are we smart enough? And I just remind her, like, yeah, we have knowledge that is so deep and so different. And just because it isn't acknowledged or valued in, like, white culture, that doesn't mean that it isn't real and invaluable and precious and sacred. And so those are some of the things that I really try to remind myself, and I try to live in with my inner parent. And living on the reservation. So I was living in California, and I just recently moved back here to the reservation. And it's been really hard because, like I said, the border towns are really intense, and I'm in rural Utah. And so The white folks are Trump supporters. They're Mormon. I mean, it's just a lot of layers of racism, homophobia, you know, and it's sometimes I really feel scared, like just to go to the grocery store, you know, like what are people going to think of me? And I have to be really careful of like, okay, how are you going to dress? Like, don't signal anything that it's going to, people are going to think that you're queer or, you know, signal that you're different in any way, because it's bad enough already that you're native, you know, they're already going to be judging you because of the color of your skin. So don't give them anything else to like judge you on and be rude to you about, because people really are out here. But one of the really beautiful things and powerful things about being, you know, back home is that connection to land. You know, I'll go on a hike, or I have a really beautiful view of the mountains behind me, which is why I'm looking across the screen here. But it's like when I am on the land, I feel that that deep connection, and just the same way that I think our people miss our homelands, I think that the land misses us, you know, and it misses our language and it misses our songs. And so when I'm out on the land, I'll sing songs to it, you know, I'll sing our traditional songs to it and try and, you know, reinvigorate that life with those sacred things. And I feel like that helps give me the strength and give me, like just a greater sense of wholeness and well-being. So that then when I go into the grocery store and people are looking at me all some kind of way, you know, it just, it's like, you don't belong here. You know, you don't belong here. Like, not me. These are my homeland, you know, like these lands are a part of me and I'm a part of them. And, you know, it just, it makes it easier to wash off the negative feelings that I think I get from, you know, these white Mormon folks. And so that's been really powerful. And, one other thing I wanted to share is just that, you know, in Indigenous cultures, a lot of times you hear about, and in others, I think too, you hear about historical trauma, you know, and the ways that the thing is your ancestors suffered from, it literally lives in our bones, you know, and in our blood and our DNA. And one of the powerful things I heard from an elder once is, you know, that's true, but to also remember the historical strength, you know, that we're here because our ancestors survived, you know, they were the best hunters, or they were the best, could shoot the arrow the straightest, you know. And so to remember that you also have all of those good things in your bloodline, because we are survivors. And so I really lean into that as well when I'm starting to feel like, you know, I'm not good enough, or I don't know if I can do it, or if I'm enough, that's a big thing for my little girl, you know. And it's just reminding her all those generations of powerful Indigenous people that we're so smart and we're able to do things to, you know, the best of their ability. And that's what got me here. And that's the blood that runs in my veins, you know, that's what I'm made of. And yeah, maybe just with my last few minutes, you know, another thing I'm really grateful for is just when I came into ACA, when I came into AA, it was during the pandemic. And so, you know, it was hard to just be in the virtual world. But one thing I'm really grateful for is all of the BIPOC meetings. You know, I came into an AA meeting that's for queer BIPOC folks. And, you know, I think some of those folks are here today, and like, they've changed my world, you know, and the same thing for ACA. Like, I'm a part of a group of amazing Indigenous ACAers, and like, that has just totally changed my relation to this program, my relation to myself. And it's been through viewing, you know, how my fellows in this program, like, talk to themselves and reparent themselves. That's taught me how to do it. And I'm just so grateful for that. So grateful for sacred spaces like this, you know, where we can come together and learn from one another and build that strength. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it off. But thanks again for listening and for all the speakers and organizers.